Namaste. So, during a recent visit to Kashmir, the high point of the visit, I felt, was a visit to the what is called as the ruins of the Surya Marthand Temple. Why I call it a high point is because apart from the fact that you can still feel something of what may have been happening there, but the whole story is deeply connected with the work of Sri Aurobindo. So that's why I feel it as a high point. And today, 2nd May, is another interesting day from the Sri Aurobindo's point of view. Sri Aurobindo was arrested today on 2nd May. And when he came out, after going into the prison cell of the British, he was no more the same. So this is the basic outline of what flashed to me when I made a visit to the Suri Marthand Temple. But first, just a little background. It's located in Anantnag, which used to be one of the terrorist infested places. And most people now, just as an aside, after the removal of Article 370, most people are very happy. In fact, everybody is happy, except I met a couple of people who didn't express any unhappiness, but you could feel a bit of a strain in some area. Otherwise, most people are very happy because it has brought prosperity. Though we are yet to see the women actively coming out and working, and I believe a society where women are neglected, where they don't step out and come to the mainstream, is a society that will decline. So it's important to, because she is the Lakshmi, she must bring prosperity. So that is something which is still perhaps missing, which is because of the nature of the society, the religion. But basically people are very happy, and I can narrate only one incident. Long back, if somebody went to Kashmir and asked, because the strong indoctrination and various other factors, I don't want to get into the political part of it. So they would normally tell you like, oh, you are from India. That speaks a lot. So, and if you were to say that you are also part of India, there would be a kind of undercurrent of hostility. You won't be very welcome. Now they ask, which part of India are you coming from? Which part you are coming from? And in fact, couple of them themselves told me, we are also a part of India, as if they wanted to make a point. Of course, it is true. We always knew it. But it was a very happy change, the kind of one could feel a subtle joy in the atmosphere. And this particularly going to Anantnag. Now, very interestingly, many, the drivers and all, they don't want to take you there. And I was told why they don't want, because it has a sad history. Not a sad history, but it's about you have caught somebody's, something deeply flawed in their character. So people want to hide it. So that's where the story of Sun Temple goes. So Sun Temple is, according to certain accounts, it dates back to 3000 BC. There are four main Sun Temples. There are quite a number of them, but four main Sun Temples in India. Sun worship has been in Egypt, Greece, Rome, everywhere, Mayan civilization. But in India, as of now, there are quite a few Sun Temples, but there are three ancient Sun Temples. This is the most ancient one, the Marthand Sun Temple, though it's in ruins. Then there is a Sun Temple in Gujarat, Modera, which is also very nice. And of course, the famous Sun Temple of Konark. So the beauty of Sun Temples, my personal fascination is that Sun is both personal and impersonal. So while they have the deity, some kind of deity they have, the Surya Devta, but also the way it is constructed is that there would be the three different timings of the sun. There are gaps within the pillars, so you will see the sun ray coming during dawn, then the sun ray coming at noon, and sun ray coming in the evening. So it is designed like that. So sun is a deity which you can behold also physically, unlike other deities which you can't behold unless you have practiced yoga. But sun is a deity, And as we know, Sri Aurobindo speaks of sun as the supramental truth consciousness. Sun is a symbol of the creator. Sun is a symbol of the supramental truth. So for us personally, it's something very interesting. So though the temple, not the way it stands today, but something of that kind was there in 3000 BC. But basically it was built in 6th to 7th AD. Now they call it CE, for whatever reason. And 7th or 8th century post-Christian era. And this was built by a very interesting king known as Lalitaditya. So Lalitaditya belonged to the, there is a dynasty of kings. Pratapaditya, Lalitaditya and so on and so forth. They ruled for about 250 years. Very mighty rulers. Their reign extended almost all over India. They went up to Afghanistan, even up to China. So, and Lalitaditya is the person who has mainly built the temple. And they came from the Karkota dynasty. Anybody remembers Karkota? It's there in Mahabharata in the Nal Damayanti story. So Karkotas were Naga kings. And they are serpent. They belong to the serpent tribe. And it's a very fascinating story, but I'm not digressing into that. But they belong to that dynasty. And Lalitaditya himself, who built the temple, seemed to be having certain magical powers. In all likelihood, he was a yogi king. And a very compassionate ruler in many ways. Just one little story which is noted in Rajatarangini of Kalhan. So the Rajatarangini notes about this king. It's unfortunately not taught to us. In all that hooliganism that went on in the name of Kashmir, nobody taught us about the Karkota dynasty empire. Even somebody said Kashmir was never part of India. Whereas this dynasty dates almost 500 years before the Mughal, rather Islamic invaders entered India. So you can imagine, it's a dynasty which was extending to Central Asia and almost the whole of India, very far. So as the story goes, that he had magical powers. Apparently, God Indra had given him certain magical powers. And he could release streams from earth by his magic. And the story goes that somebody came from the enemy kingdom, from far away. Probably, if you go into the history, it looks like higher up, maybe towards China. So he had relations even with the Chinese emperors. And this man came disfigured, nose cut off, portions of limbs cut off. And he said, my king has, I was a council and minister in his kingdom, but I spoke highly of you, therefore he has done this condition of mine. And I have come seeking shelter in your place. And Lalitaditya gave him shelter. And also healed him. He put all the best people to heal him. He got healed and everything. And then he said that I am very angry at this particular king. Who has behaved this way with me. And who is very, he painted a picture of that king is a very bad king. And therefore you are the one who must take this kingdom under your rule. Because I can see your rule is a rule of dharma. So he says okay. So they go to fight the king. And they have to come into, they have to cross a desert. So that's why I feel it must be higher up. So as they come across a desert, then this fellow says, actually it is all a setup thing. He discovers it was all set up. And they have entered a desert where the desert, there is hardly any water for the army. And therefore, it was all planned that Lalitaditya's army will die of famine and lack of water. So the action of Lalitaditya is something very interesting. He says, I appreciate your loyalty to your king and I am not going to punish you. But I am going to fulfill this mission. And that's when with his powers, he took the spear and dug at several places within the desert and water sprang forth. And then, of course, the rest is history. He conquered the kingdom. But he never killed or did anything. Because he said, I appreciate your loyalty to your king. That's how a person should be loyal. So the way of the reign of dharma, that's how he is described. And one of the most powerful dynasties in entire number of dynasties you will read, Maurya dynasty and Ashoka the Great. But this is one of the most powerful dynasties. And they drew their name Aditya from the sun god. So before I come to this legend, so the temple, sun temple is built on a plateau from where you can actually see the whole Kashmir Valley. I mean, you can't see the details, for that you need probably some special equipment, but it's on a height from where you can see. And it's a marvel of architecture where they have built it with stones, those limestones, and how they had ways to bring water into this place. And there are Yajnavedis, there are 84 deities who are there, Garbhagrihas. The main, of course, is Surya. And at the entrance, you have Jaya Vijaya. Even now, those carvings, you have Brahmaji, you have Vishnuji, you have Shivji, you have, of course, Krishna, you have Saraswati, Lakshmi, then Yamuna and Ganga rivers, even Ganga riding on a crocodile, and all the Vahan with very nicely. Of course, you can see that they are disfigured, but Ganesh, if you go near, you can actually take a big zoom in picture and you will see it. It's as clear as that. And very beautifully carved. One can imagine what it must have been during those times. So this was a temple dedicated to sun god, where Lalita Aditya and his family, they used to perform yajna, sacrifice. So through the sacrifice and mantrochar, they used to pray to the sun god. Then Sikandar Butshikan. Butshikan is the man who hated all idols, who took it to himself that he'll destroy you. I think he was the seventh Islamic ruler of Afghanistan. That time they had not yet entered this far. So he came, and he is one of those persons who had destroyed the idols, disfigured, which I find it's one thing to invade a kingdom and conquer it. Kings used to do it. People often say that kings have done it. Yes, kings used to do it. Those were times when you were building empires. But destroying the native culture, destroying things of beauty, speaks about something very cruel and hard in conscience. The Nazis tried to do it in France. So that is not just an ordinary invasion, but it shows a very dark mindset. And he came, invaded. And then, of course, subsequently, the temple came into ruins. Earthquake also hit that area. And so now what we see is ruins. But still, despite the ruins, if you sit quietly, it's a beautiful place. One can feel something of, you can enter into that era by a kind of inner meditation. You don't even have to sit, just walking around. So there were 84 deities, and the main, of course, is Surya Devta. And then, of course, you have Brahma, Vishnu on the two sides. And at the main entrance, you have Jaya Vijaya. So this is the basic thing about the temple. And if you, there has been a kind of construction by what it would have been, and there are images available that what it would have been. It's spread over the temple itself is not too big, 250 feet by 175 feet, but otherwise the whole area is quite big, and you walk through the stairs like any Indian temple, and architecturally also it's amazing. So this is about the temple part. Now this temple is dedicated to the sun god Marthand. But as a little humorous aside, because we wanted to go to this temple, and as I said, drivers know it, but they are not very keen, because many of them who have been converts, so who converted them mainly, it was Sikandar Butshikan. And it's like identifying yourself with people who were very cruel. It's like saying your forefathers were extremely cruel, extremely murderous, and so you want to hide that part of history. It has been done in Pakistan also. But he said, yes, he's I know the place, nice man though. And they took us to Sun Temple, and we are wondering, because we had seen the images, we said, this is a proper temple, it's not. And it is written there, Sun Temple, Surya Temple, the name of the place is Mattan, M-A-T-T-A-N. So we said, what is this? Then we showed the images. He said, oh, okay, that is in ruins. Okay, I know the place. We put it on Google. Finally, we reached the place. Beautiful place. Kashmir all through is beautiful, anywhere you go. So, it is dedicated to the aspect of sun god, who is Marthand, known as Marthand. The word comes from, there are different kind of etymologies, but one of the etymology, and it is mentioned, Marthand as the sun god, is mentioned in Rig Veda, 10th mandala, it is mentioned in Bhagavad Puran, it is mentioned in Brahma Puran, and so several of the ancient literatures. And Marthand, Marth, and, the dead egg, or a baby which is dead inside the womb, or a baby which is not formed, it is still dead, it is yet to come to life. So the legend goes, which Aurobindo mentions about Marthand, and this legend is in several places, as I said, the story of the lost son, but Aurobindo speaks of it in Secret of the Vedas, that Aditi, as we know, is infinite consciousness. And this infinite consciousness, Aditi, is again born to Daksha. So Daksha is the divine mind, one of those like Indra, who is, many rays, each knowing what is to be done, right discernment, right action. And she's again born to Daksha Prajapati as Aditi, bearing the same name. That is there in Shiv Puran, and the story is related to that. So Aditi brings out seven great gods. Vishnu himself desires to take birth from her. I mean, basically as formless aspects, by birth is meant is that they assume a form. So he also desires to take a birth. So there are seven Adityas who are born. And each of the Adityas, they go into the upward heavenly route, as the story goes. And now comes the eighth son. So there is a bit of dialogue between or exchange between Aditi and Kashyap Rishi, but we'll not go into that. But basically, this child in the womb of Aditi, eighth child, is not well formed. So is like almost like dead. And as the story goes, she casts it down to earth into the darkness, into the cave of darkness. And this is the sun which is lost in the cave of darkness. And then this sun battles against all the forces of darkness. Slowly it gets formed. And then it emerges. And when it emerges, it is the first step toward the ascension to Surya. That's how the Vedas say. Like a legend. That he must emerge from the darkness. Who helps him to emerge? One is Indra. Second is Agastya Rishi. Or Angiras Rishi, both Agastya Rishi comes. And this legend is in different ways. One is Indra and Agastya Koloki, followed by opening of these caves, because he is hidden in the cave of darkness. How they describe, like cows in a pen. So what is the pen in which the cows are sheltered? Cows are the sun, the rays of the sun, the luminous powers which are held back under the cover of the inconscient and the ignorance. If I have to put it in modern psychology, it would mean that we have within us divine powers, but they are concealed by the ignorance of earth nature. We don't know about it. So one of the signs of ignorance is to say, I am helpless, I am useless, I am this, I am that. So we limit ourselves, whereas deep within us is the hidden sun. So this hidden sun comes out, one, by the power of Indra, his thunderbolt. Indra's thunderbolt itself is fashioned. One story is from the sea foam, but the other story is fashioned by the light. So that light strikes the subconscious caves. Now you see, psychology is coming up. So it strikes the caves of the subconscious, and subconscious brings it, resists. It's not easy. It tries to woo you, woo the human being, and pull it into it, that look here, we are so comfortable, everything is so wonderful, why you want to engage in a battle and struggle? But then Rishi Agastya accepts Indra's offer to assist him in the battle, and by the power of the word, you can put Angiras, Agastya, different names, by the power of the mantra, these caves are broken. Now when these caves are broken, all the asuras, particularly Vala is one of them, who covers, he is slain by Indra's thunderbolt. And then these Marthand, these cows are released, and he begins to emerge. Now once he emerges, because these caves have broken, then by the seven gods who have already made a path, Marthand will ascend. Where he will ascend? To the fullness of Surya. He will go through the Swar Lok and arrive at the fullness of Surya. Okay, now let's translate it into our own language. Within us, lost within us, is the divine consciousness, the divine sun, the creator, the supramental. It is hidden in the cave of darkness. And its child is a hansa, a bird, who is also seated within, which is the psychic being. And slowly it is struggling to emerge out of the darkness. And as it emerges out of the darkness, there are divine powers which assist it. So there are the gods who assist, there are the seers who are assisting it. And by the power of the mantra, by the power of progressive illumination, in our practical life, we could say, how do we have the power of illumination and the mantra? My very simple practical thing is read Sri Aurobindo. You'll have both illumination as well as the mantra, especially Savitri. So then slowly Martand begins to form itself. It is unformed. It has to be fashioned in a form, and it is described then when it's fully formed. It is even more luminous than the gods, more splendor. So it is like the fall from above, and then it's eventually recovering its original splendor. Now when this sun begins to emerge, the first thing that comes is dawn. So now you see how it is connected to Savitri. Savitri is the sun which is emerging from the darkness, the power of the sun. So then the first thing is the dawn, illumination. And suddenly that's the real initiation. Initiation is not just giving you a mantra from outside. Suddenly there is an inner illumination or a dawn, like a dawn, which is a promise. It comes. Dawn is a promise of what is going to come. That now you can, the sun is going to come. Dawn has already come. So with this illumination, now slowly the powers of the divine which are hidden within us, they begin to emerge and take over the fields of darkness. Darkness slowly gets destroyed or transformed, converted, until the fullness of the supramental consciousness is regained here upon earth. So this story of the eighth son of Aditi being cast into earth nature, interestingly, perhaps this what is also referred to in the eighth child of Devaki, which is Krishna. There are several places this story is referred to in different ways. So this is the story of Martand, and it's directly connected to the yoga of Sri Aurobindo, because Sri Aurobindo speaks of the powers, divine consciousness, the supermind hidden in the darkness below, and the powers of darkness do not allow you to either bring it out, they try to win you over, they don't let it come out without a proper struggle. But once it emerges, then it can arrive at its fullness through the path already cleared by the seven Adityas, the gods. What has it got to do with today's date? So I sometimes feel, I think they made a movie also, but they didn't bring out this aspect. So what happens, Sri Aurobindo's transition from Kolkata to Pondicherry. So in Kolkata, he rises to a point where one can see almost a human and the yogi, you know, developing to a great point. I mean, he had arrived at the peak of what humanity could, even by yoga, arrive at the complete stillness of all nature. And then he enters into the cave of darkness, which is the Alipur prison. If you really look at it, it's literally a cave of darkness. There's nothing which you can do there except perhaps you are at the mercy of the, British Raj, which is, which can give you death sentence or whatever they wish to. But then in that cave of darkness, whom does he meet? He meets Vasudev Shri Krishna. And when he is released from the cave of darkness, then you can see like Martand, he is released and he rises toward the fullness of the supramental life. And this is what he wants to give us. This was my personal flash of revelation. I don't say I've read it anywhere or Sri Aurobindo has said that, but my own revelation that day, that moment was, and it was 30th April when I went there, which is the marriage day of Sri Aurobindo with Mrinalini Devi. But this came very unexpectedly, that this is how Sri Aurobindo entered into the cave of darkness. He has recounted this in several places, including Pilgrim of the Night, that poem, I made an assignation with the night, in the abyss was fixed our rendezvous, carrying in my breast God's deathless light, I came her dark and dangerous heart to woe. So Sri Aurobindo enters into this cave of darkness by his own choice, though there are circumstances, everything. And then when he enters, he brings out the sun which is hidden. And from that point of onwards, 1909, he said, the sun of India's destiny will rise and overflow India and overflow Asia and overflow the world. So he brought out that sun which was hidden inside. And then, of course, the rest is a process of the sun ascending through the seven steps or nine steps, as some of the Vedic rishis, Navagavahas and the Dashagavahas, and each of the rishis which ascends will help the others to ascend. That's how the whole process goes. So I found this whole story very interesting. Now, it was destroyed, and in locally, one of the films, it was referred to as Shaitan Ki Gufa. So many people, you know, felt, look, it's our sun temple, and they have referred to it as Shaitan Ki Gufa. Meaning thereby, Shaitan Ki Gufa means a cave of the devil, devil's cave. But this also I find very interesting. Why they did it, I don't know. But I feel they caught some fragment of the legend, but they didn't understand its meaning. So literally, the sun entering the cave of darkness is Shaitan Ki Gufa. It has entered into the cave of ignorance. What is Shaitan? Shaitan is in ignorance, inconscience. So they knew, they probably caught fragments of the story, but it must have been a closely guarded secret. This yajna which were conducted, through which Lalita Ditya got those magical powers. He must have been a yogi in the line of the Vedic rishis. And so they must have heard that something happens there, and they talk about a story where probably, you know, there is some cave of darkness in which sun is there, and they are bringing out the sun. So they probably talked of Shaitan Ki Gufa in that sense, but they could not imagine, because it's not there as part of the culture or in the yoga itself, in the Mohammedan yoga, this, or in fact most of the yogas which are non-Vedic, this idea of the creator hidden by the veil of ignorance and emerging, you don't find it. You don't find even in Buddhist yoga, strangely. You don't find it in Mohammedan yoga. You don't find it in Christian yoga. But in the Vedic yogas and all the yogas that are in line with the Vedic yogas, again like Sri Krishna entering into the prison and then emerging out. So this idea is so interesting, and I think it has a great practical implication for all of us. So all of us are like that bird which is the child of Marthand, and or which is being formed by the power of Marthand, the psychic being. And all of us carry this divine consciousness hidden behind the veil of ignorance. And it is struggling to emerge. And when it starts coming to the surface, the struggle becomes more and more acute. Because these powers try last ditch attempt to hold it back. That's why it is said darkness is deepest, densest before the dawn. So, and it's an axiom in life that if one is facing a state where it seems from every side there is hopelessness, that means we are closest to the sun. This is the lesson of this story, message. It's a story of loss and life, a story of hope emerging out of the womb of death. Mirth and. So on one side it is dead, and the other side still there is the possibility of life which will emerge. So this story is relevant to all of us. And in this process there are cosmic powers. For us, we are so fortunate that we have not only cosmic power, but Aditi herself, the Divine Mother. So this is a story directly related to Mother Aditi, who is the infinite consciousness embodied by the Divine Mother. She helps these powers to emerge from within. So if we were to connect it to the ancient Vedic story, Shobhita would be someone like Agastya, and the Indra, who by the power of the mantra and the thunderbolt is breaking open. And whereas the Divine Mother is like Aditi, who is, of course, Indra of the Vedic period, not Indra of the Puranas. Indra of the Purana is very different. So she is helping this child to be, this Marthand, to emerge and to form him, because he is unformed. And now he will be formed, taking into account this earth matter. He is not like the gods who have gone straight to the luminous worlds. He is being formed out of earth matter. If you look at it another way, earth matter is like dead, but within it is the divine possibility. And as it comes alive, this matter itself gets transformed. And when it gets transformed, then it can embody the highest divine consciousness in an earthly body. So this is the whole story. I hope you like it and enjoy it. I enjoyed that whole thing, being there. Namaste.